Some people claim not to believe in ghosts. In their denial, they fail to see that pain haunts families with neither pause nor mercy, and don't understand that spirits are unending echoes of pain that are very, very real. There are times when I loved my job as a social worker, and there are times when I hated it. I hated going to Morton Cryver's house. I'm not certain how he and his wife were kept in the system as foster parents, but I suspect they had complete protection from an influential politician. They should have never had little William. He was 6 years old, but 4 years in the foster system had left him without stable adult influences, consistent schooling, or regular doctor visits. I nearly gave up hope when he got sent to the Cryver house. A single social worker always dreams of changing the world and only occasionally succeeds. I dreaded my first status check. 1913 Hill Street was drastically different from its neighbors. The yard spoke of sadness. Just enough weeds thrived to prove that the dirt was not barren. Sequential rotting pumpkins stood as a time capsule for each of the past 10 Halloweens. I leaned down to pet a cat before realizing that it was buzzing because the flies knew it was a full week dead. I knocked and the door opened. The smell of rot, yeast, body odor, and hopelessness caressed my skin and violated my pores, curling around my calves and settling in place like a contented pet. "Come in, lovely lady," Morton Cryver cooed with an unpleasant smile as he flipped a greasy strand of gray hair over his pale, bald dome. I stepped gingerly around the garbage that cluttered the floor and walked into the living room.
"You can have a seat on the couch. Just be careful of the bread, it's gotten moldy,"
he explained before taking a long drink from the bottle of wine in his hand. I decided against asking why there was so much moldy bread on the living room couch. "I'm here to talk about William, Mr. Cryver." He tapped his fat fingers together conspiratorially.
Yes, the boy. He was so lost before we found him, and so lucky to be brought into our fold."
I carefully placed my shoe on the patch of floor between a rotten hamburger and the refuse from an overflowing cat litter box. "Of course, Mr. Cryver. We have, however, been in need of his medical updates." He tapped his fingers nervously together once more.
"Medical updates? He's not sick."
I stood firm. "Of course, Mr. Cryver, but it's necessary to log his immunization record." Morton Cryver wiped his nose nervously. A fat, green booger tumbled from his nostril and landed deep in the carpet. He let it stay there. "I need to see the boy." I didn't think he was going to allow me to proceed, so I went ahead without permission. I knew the boy's bedroom was just down the hall. I opened it to near darkness. As my eyes adjusted, comprehension slowly dawned. Morton's wife, Zill, sat meekly on William's bed. The boy was a putrid mess. He lay naked, except for a dirty white shirt, upon what looked to be his deathbed. Sunken eyes showed no understanding of the world around him. His skin was traffic light yellow, and his arms and legs were spindle thin. The only evidence of meaty flesh was enormous boils on his legs, transparent and filled to the brim with pus. As I watched, the largest boil erupted and Zill leaned forward with a bucket. Frothy white discharge mixed with excess blood pulsed from his leg in foul clumps.
still scraped the bucket against his skin in an effort to squeeze all residual pus from the boy's limb. He quivered in sickness.
You see?
Cryver shouted in joy.
My son does not need inoculations. I refuse to vaccinate any of my foster children. My wife will tend to him obediently until he heals. Just look at him. He's been like this for nearly a week.
He grinned and turned to face me.
All of his toxins are spilling out into that bucket.
The state offered its official condolences to Morton Cryver after he allowed his foster son to die. We all want to fight the system at some point in our lives, but most people give up after realizing that the best they can do is spend a lifetime effecting incremental change within that system. There will always be yet another task that is too great to attempt. On that day, we simply hope our lives will serve as an inspiration for another incremental changemaker to lift the Sisyphean rock that is only touched by those foolish enough to dream. I cried upon hearing that Cryver took two foster children to replace the dead one. Phoebe was 8, and Eddie just 6 years old. I had a caseload of 19 children under the age of 13, but these two stood out. They had been bounced around for years, yet always managed to find a way to stay together. Phoebe and Eddie had only each other, and they spent every day fighting for the hope of a happier future. It was a battle that no child should ever have to fight. They had cheered upon hearing that the Cryvers would take them both, but I did not find them smiling during my visit. I stood in the kitchen at the back of the house because Morton did not want me coming through the front door. The cockroaches are going to be a problem, I explained as I stared at the festering mass on his counter. Morton smiled, revealing a gap in his teeth that had not been present the last time I saw him.
No, they won't. The little buggers always scamper away once the food they're after is completely dissolved.
Saliva bubbled through his lips as he spoke. He grabbed a presumably warm can of beer from the table, cracked it open, then chugged the entire thing. Upon finishing, he crushed the can, burped loudly, and dropped his trash onto the floor. That's when Morton's rail-thin wife, Zill, took 4 steps into the room and whispered something into his ear. Without turning to acknowledge her, he straight-armed her frail body, sending her tumbling into the next room.
"Not now, woman, I got business!"
He snorted deeply, then spit an exceptionally large piece of phlegm onto the window. It hung there, quivering like jelly. It was completely black.
"Besides," he continued gleefully, "all the sanitary complaints against me have a way of solving themselves."
He chuckled, the rolls on his pale stomach jiggling independently of each other.
"I'm in perfect standing with the state."
After controlling my urge to vomit, I walked around him and headed down the hall towards the bedrooms. Phoebe met me outside the door, desperation etched onto her dirty face. Her red, long-sleeved shirt seemed inappropriate for the hot weather.
"Are you here to save us?"
A piece of my soul dies every time I want to say I want to, but I can't, and can't say it. "I'm here to make sure that you are in the best place you can be." She stared at me, her large brown eyes unblinking.
"So you're lying, just like all the rest."
I hesitated too long to save the moment. She turned and walked into the bedroom.
I followed her, desperate to set things right. Phoebe, are you sharing a room with Eddie? I know that he's your biological brother, but the rules say that... I froze in the doorway. Phoebe was standing over her brother with a large butcher knife. He was staring at me, seemingly resigned to his fate.
Put that, it's too late,
Phoebe explained, with a voice that was far too mature for her years.
Do you know why he wanted two of us?
The tears started to fall.
He makes us fight each other. And then he beats the winner.
Without dropping the knife, she pulled back her sleeve to reveal an angry pastiche of green, purple, and yellow bruises. When she continued talking, there was no feeling in a voice that conveyed only deadness.
I have to hurt Eddie every night so he can be done with fighting sooner.
She took a deep breath.
You were our only hope, but now I understand that we're just not savable. Sometimes, the only way to win is to lose faster.
I was quick to react, but she was quicker. Phoebe had stabbed her brother in the throat twice before I could push her away. I'm well enough trained in CPR to know that Eddie was beyond saving. I pushed down on his severed jugular, but it was like trying to stop a river with a fishing pole. He never cried or protested. It took several seconds for me to remember the knife-wielding girl just beyond my reach. When I looked up, she was standing on the other side of the room. I couldn't get to her without abandoning Eddie.
Please,
I begged, head swimming with vertigo and eyes swimming with tears.
Nothing's ever hopeless.
She stared back without any emotion at all.
Never stop sharing hope. I guess there just isn't enough of it. Share it now. Because the only way to know when it's too late is through regret.
Then Phoebe stabbed herself in the diaphragm, muting the screams she so desperately tried to unleash. I dragged her brother's cooling body towards her and pressed one hand on each bloody wound, hoping to save at least one of them. My hope was not fulfilled. Morton was furious as the two body bags were wheeled out of his house.
I can't believe that you called the cops on me, you little bitch. I had to spend 10 fucking minutes in handcuffs before they got the phone call ordering me to be released.
My stomach froze. He waved a condescending finger at me. His fingernail was long, yellow, and broken.
Don't you dare try to come after me again, unless you want to get burned, you stupid woman.
Then he smiled.
I'll see you in my next case.
Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. Emily Dickinson's four lines are on the wall of my office so that I have something to take my mind off of dead children. To be sure, there are moments of great triumph in my capacity as a social worker. And those moments bolster my hope in the darkest of cases. Morton Criver loves testing that hope. He flashed black teeth at me and swigged from the plastic jug of Kirkland Signature Moonshine as I stepped back into his pungent living room. I hated being there, but I owed it to William Phoebe, and Eddie. There was no one else who knew or cared that they ever lived.
It's a good thing that the Quartz understood that you were mistaken about my foster children's deaths,
Morton said while scratching his crotch through soiled sweatpants.
It's okay, love. I forgive you. Women's brains are different. They get hysterical sometimes. That fact is simply beyond your control.
I maintained my stony gaze at him. You were given charge of another foster child within 24 hours of the previous one's deaths, I explained calmly. How fortunate that your government's subsidies continued uninterrupted. I took a deep breath and regretted it when my nose was assaulted with the smell of rat feces and yeast. You seem particularly interested in acquiring a teenage girl this time. Your eagerness caused some concern. He raised his hands in protest.
Now, no need for concern, miss. I made sure that this...
Here he tapped his jug of moonshine.
Is far out of her reach. Do you remember what I said about women's brains not understanding what's best? Probably not, but you look like you have a nice man taking care of you.
He licked his lips with a phlegmy tongue.
That's why I've decided to take in the girl. There's just no way she can protect a pristine body from a vile world without my help. No, sorry, nothing impure goes into her flesh. I'm keeping her fresh, healthy, beautiful. Untouched.
He belched deeply, launching a rogue corn kernel from his teeth. I made a note on my file, then looked up at him. Mr. Criver, our main concern is to ensure that she is safe. He nodded gravely.
The girl is quite safe from all that would soil her. We protect her from the outside world. Isn't that right, Zill?
She had been so silent that I hadn't noticed his wife in the corner. Zill pivoted her head slightly towards her husband and nodded in obedience.
Well, there you have it, miss. We don't let her get out into dangerous situations, and we keep the impurities of the world away from her. She will be beautiful,
he cooed.
So,
he continued sharply, snapping his fingers at me.
Off you go, then.
I didn't budge. Mr. Criver, I need to see Samantha to confirm her well-being for myself. Morton narrowed his eyes at me.
I know your game. You keep doubting me, because you don't want me getting the money that I'm entitled to have. The rats that you call children should be grateful for what I give them, and thankful for what I take away.
What you're taking away is $1,913 each week from the state. Given the condition of your house, we are not completely convinced that the money is being used to create a safe and healthy home life for these children. Are you aware of the fact that you were in violation of several sanitation requirements? He narrowed his beady eyes at me as he dug a glob of earwax from his head and wiped it on his pale shirt. Mr. Criver, I responded coolly, making sure to maintain eye contact. These children have had things taken away from the entirety of their short lives. They come to me with no family to love them in a world that never cared enough to necessitate forgetting them. We're not in the business of taking away, because the world has done enough of that. I believe in hopeless hope, but I have stronger faith and reason. Where is Samantha? A soft bang reverberated from a nearby door. Morton's eyes darted around.
You best be going now. There's a good girl.
Bang! Bang! Mr. Cryver, there is no way I am leaving this house without talking to Samantha. I need to hear directly from her exactly how this last month has been.
Flames of anger ignited behind his eyes.
This has been the best month of her life, stupid girl. I have kept her away from danger, preserved her purity, and made sure that even she won't deny my efforts to make her beautiful. She's been exposed to no toxins, vaccinations, or unnecessary carbohydrates. I've made her healthy, because she did not understand how to do so herself.
With a final bang, a door to the living room burst open. At first, I did not understand what I was seeing. Then, I was dizzy with realization. Samantha looked like a skeleton. Every rib poked through her shirt. Her kneecaps were the thickest part of her legs, and all but 5 teeth had fallen out from malnutrition. The sunken crevices of her ashen face put every contour of her skull on stark display. The black shirt hanging from her frame should have been snug on a small child. As she stumbled forward, a clump of her hair fell from her scalp and drifted sadly to the floor. She couldn't have weighed more than 75 pounds. Barely able to stand, she clutched a chair for support. Then she screamed. It was a weak sound. Almost stronger than a kitten's meow, but not by much. She attempted to cry, but her body could spare no excess material for tears.
I'm so hungry,
she whispered huskily.
I've lost the weight you told me to lose.
She tried and failed to sob.
Please, tell me I'm good enough to eat. Am I beautiful enough for you? Am I beautiful enough for you?
I think that everyone knew my fourth trip to Morton Cryver's house would be my last. True, his mysterious connections with the state had protected him from prosecution for the deaths of several children, and his ability to acquire ever more foster kids defied all logic. But all systems have a breaking point. The 4 dead crows in his front yard seemed ominous. Alabaster maggots stood out against the black feathers. There is always someone who benefits from another's loss. Morton opened the door and flashed me a black-toothed smile. I stepped over the rusty nails and cat vomit, proceeding once more into the house.
You're wearing a different top today, girl.
He gurgled a mouthful of saliva.
I prefer the one with a lower neckline.
I ignored his glare as he shut the door behind us. I'm here to talk about your pending acceptance of 5 foster children, Mr. Cryver. He ignored me, turning to walk into the kitchen. His toothpick-thin wife, Zill, waited for him with fear etched into her wrinkles. The state has uncovered some very troubling connections between you and a known human trafficking organization, I continued as he walked away. The alarming coincidence of your 5-child foster request on the same day these connections were found raises grave concerns on our part. Zill was standing uncomfortably in front of the counter. Morton shoved her violently aside and cooed at a bottle of whiskey next to the sink.
You need to understand that my recommendation to the state is that you not be granted custody.
Your recommendations mean nothing, stupid girl,
he hissed. A thread of snot blasted from his nose, then lodged in place on his long, protruding nose hairs. He didn't seem to notice.
The state will give me what I want, and you might finally learn that women can only make a difference when men choose to humor them.
My blood boiled. But I'd long ago learned to prevent people like him from affecting me too deeply. No city can exist without a sewer of shit running below it. The only question is how we deal with this knowledge.
Morton, please, you had 19 drinks yesterday and 13 today. If you love me, you won't have any of that whiskey, Syl pleaded.
Morton sneered at his wife, then flicked the cap off the bottle and took a large swig.
Mr. Criver, I continued, your implication in the human trafficking group is extremely serious. You need to understand that I will do everything in my power to stop your acquisition of 5 children.
You need to understand your place, nosy girl. Once the foster kids are mine, they're mine. Are you smart enough to comprehend that?
Please, Morton,
Syl whined, reaching for her husband.
If you love me, you'll put that bottle down.
Morton spit on his wife. A poisonous green glob of phlegm splashed onto her pale shirt where it quivered in place. Morton grinned. Mr. Criver, I know that this house is a death trap for children. Even if the entire world turns a blind eye, you need to understand that I will never stop fighting for—
Shut the fuck up and learn your place, bitch!
Morton spat before chugging from the bottle.
Please,
Syl wailed.
Show me that you love me by putting down the whiskey!
Her voice dropped to a near whisper.
It's all I ask.
And it's too much to ask from a wife who should be seen and not heard.
Morton growled before taking another large sip.
Mr. Criver, you cannot continue like this, I shot back fiercely. Your time is almost up.
He laughed at this, spraying a fine mist of whiskey into the air.
My time is almost up. I am untouchable. Listen here, missy, and you listen good. Because you need to understand how a man works a system, not the other way around. At least if he's smart enough, that is.
He gave a gap-toothed grin before sliding the bottle between his lips once more. A pair of shimmering trails fell from Syl's eyes.
Please, Morton. I never ask you for anything. I'm an obedient wife, but this is the one thing I need from you. Surely you can show me your love by granting one single request. Put the bottle down.
The hit was hard enough to send Syl instantly crumpling to the floor.
Something broke in me. I had to react. It was obvious that reporting him to the police would do no good because he was protected from on high. Could I overpower him? Probably, but it would cost me my job. But in that moment, it seemed worth the price. I curled my fist into a ball. He looked down at my hand and cackled.
Going to take a swing at me, little girl? That's cute. You think you can make a difference in a world that already knows what's best for you?
Please,
Syl moaned from the floor.
Stop before it's too late!
He scowled at her and took his biggest gulp yet.
Stupid woman, so fucking slow to learn her place.
He bent down so that his red cheeks were inches from her own, the spit flying from his mouth and coating her face.
It already is too late.
Syl sniffed.
I know.
she responded meekly. Morton sneered at her, then snapped his head back. His face was suddenly quite pale. He grabbed his throat. Morton dropped the whiskey, and the bottle fell to the floor, exploding in a shower of broken glass. With a gurgling noise, a frothy fountain of spit poured from his white lips. He coughed once, twice, and then just convulsed as his throat closed. He grabbed his neck with the other hand and tried desperately to breathe as his face turned fire engine red. That's when Morton Cryver shit his pants. There was no hiding what was overwhelming on a visual, auditory, and especially olfactory level. He collapsed to his knees as Zill cried softly in a corner. Morton's quivering crescendoed into spasms as a urine stain blossomed on his crotch. I stood back as a spray of froth burst from his lips like an exploding zit. I'm certain that Morton Cryver had plans for his last words, but his voice would go unheard, and his final act on this earth was an unholy fart accompanied by a faceplant that knocked out six of his blackened teeth.
"There's love, even in the darkest places," Zill moaned. "I really believed he wouldn't drink the whiskey, but I needed him to prove that he loved me," she wailed. I really thought he did. I believed he would pass my test and that he wouldn't die."
I walked over to where she sat in the corner, then hugged Zill, rocking back and forth. "You were the perfect mother for five children that you will never see again," I explained softly. "We changed the world, Zill, but in ways that we never expect." Since Morton's bottle of whiskey had smashed to the ground, there was no way to prove that it had been tampered with. The official cause of death was suicide by intentional poisoning. With no witnesses to the contrary, the case was hastily closed. Zill had spent her entire life not working because her husband had forbidden her from having a job. Without his foster income and illicit benefits, her situation seemed dire. Fortunately, I was able to connect her with an entry-level job in social work. It's not glamorous, but it's respectable, and the two concepts are often at odds with each other. I continued my work as though nothing had happened. Certainly, someone's world had changed, but that happens every day. Most people just don't seem to notice.